Welcome to the Paint to Power podcast, where we have engaging, informed and interesting conversations on topics including women's health, the menstrual cycle, chronic pain, trauma, the nervous system, relationships and feminism. I'm Lisa Dion. I'm a women's health coach, facilitator and educator, supporting you on your journey of healing, recovery and moving into a place of personal power in your body and in your life.
Everyone, and welcome to the next episode of From Pain to Power. I am back from my travels, and this is the first episode I'm recording after being away for quite some time. So I do feel a little bit rusty, but it's really, really good to be here. Today, I have Sarah Slattery with me today. Sarah is a graduate from last year's menstrual cycle coaching and facilitation professional training, and is also a peer and fellow coach here in Ireland, and we've been navigating similar circles for quite some time. So we're going to be having a chat here together about the program, about her work, about creativity, about purpose, about cycles. And yeah, I'm excited for this conversation. So before we say hi to Sarah, I'd love to just read out her little bio here. Sarah Slattery supports values-led women to liberate themselves in life and work by reclaiming their time, energy, passions, and purpose. She has over 20 years' experience in working with individuals and families in the process of change in the community sector, education, welfare services, and more recently in her own private practice. And you can find her at sarahslattery.ie or on Instagram, and I'll make sure to link her website and her social media in the show notes. So good morning, Sarah, or nearly good afternoon here at this this stage. How are you doing?
I'm good, Lisa. Thanks a million for having me. I know you're just back from holidays, and I similarly have back to school, back to work vibes going on here as well. So yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of September vibes, isn't it? It's sort of easing in again. And
it is. And remembering that it's easing in. It doesn't need to be full on straight away, you know.
Oh my God, I know. I think we all need that reminder. So we were just saying there before we hit record that we might do a little cycle check-in, because it's just a nice thing to do, you know, given the nature of this podcast. So where are you today, Sarah, and how are you feeling with that?
Yeah, so today I'm on day one of my cycle, which, you know, considering what we're going to be talking about today is quite apt, because normally I would not schedule a speaking engagement when I'm on day one. That being said, I'm not only in a cycle, but I'm in a larger cycle of perimenopause. And so my cycles are no longer as I know exactly when things are going to happen. So I then, and my schedule has to be a little more fluid around that. So, okay. Yeah, so it's just an interesting time.
Okay. So it was okay for you to show up today with the work you've done, and, you know, how was it for you? Because I'm curious about that. If you've kind of had more structure with your cycle, how was it then for you to, like, today's Monday to come to a speaking thing on day one?
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, you know, and if we're working with our menstrual cycle in relation to work, you know, this would be in my ovulatory phase of my cycle. But that, you know, I think we also have to remember that that's not how we live. We have to consider other people. We have to consider our schedules. We have to consider childcare. And so sometimes I think we just do the best that we can. And that's a process I've had to go through, that sometimes things aren't perfect. But because I work for myself, I can buffer this on either side. So I can not have a whole load of work beforehand. I can give myself some time afterwards. And that is enough. But to circle back to your actual question around how is it with cycles not being as clear as they were, like, it hasn't been great, if I'm honest, because I, you know, I've gone through years of very challenging cycle situations with fibroids and endo and, you know, many things. But the one constant I had was that, okay, I have a 29-day cycle. And so I knew to the button. And so I could schedule things. I could say, no, I'm not going to go out for dinner that night. I have fibroids. It's too uncomfortable for me. Whereas now that's just a little bit more, it's a bit unknown now, only in regards of a couple of days, but it's still a little bit of a, of a transition. And I guess that's kind of a bigger cycle of being in, it's really an autumn phase, isn't it? On a larger scale, perimenopause. So yeah, it's wasn't crazy about it when it started, but I'm getting a bit more used to it. And I guess the work that we would have done together in the menstrual cycle awareness facilitators training would have really prepared me for a lot of that as well, because we do so much inner work ourselves, so much nervous system work, that has allowed me to just be gentler and kinder with myself around this transition.
I love that, Sarah. Thanks for sharing that. I think that's a really important topic, actually. That's a whole other topic, really, isn't it? But navigating the uncertainty when our cycles change, as cycles do, it's their nature. So yeah, it's really interesting to hear how you're going through it live as you're going through it. I'm day 20, so kind of the other side of the cycle, and definitely starting to feel that descent now. And sometimes I get like, it's like you're in inner summer and then you think you're still in summer, but you're not. Your body is like calling you to this slower pace, and there's this like tension point between the two energies, and this frantic energy moves through my body, and I can get a little stressed and overwhelmed and feel like just I have a lot of things to do. So I guess that's kind of where I'm at now, but I'm glad for cycle awareness, as always, that yes, you can catch these moments, you know.
Absolutely. And I actually had, when I signed up for your course last year, this was my third coaching training, and it was only maybe 2 months after I'd signed up that I started noticing these symptoms. And I did question, well, why would I do this training now? Because if my cycles are beginning to change and I'm coming to the end of that. And I did wonder whether this was for me, because I was in moving into a different phase. But yeah, it turns out that it actually doesn't matter, because cycles are cycles, and we can apply what we learn from the menstrual cycle to larger cycles. And even through this phase, it's still extremely good to be so literate in what my body is trying to tell me, you know, because this phase is going to go on for years, possibly, you know, another 5 or 6. So yeah. So rather than wishing it away or wishing it were different, to just navigate that, that change. Yeah.
I love that. It's like there's a real presence to that, isn't there, Sarah? It's like, like I love to refer to menstrual cycle awareness as an embodied mindfulness practice, because you're either going to be against your cycle, which we've all done.
Yes.
And I still go there.
Every now and then. Yeah.
Like, you know, the resistance is real. Or the other option is, and I used to think the other option was get the certainty, but no, it's not get the certainty. It's be with what is, you know? Yes. And that's obviously easier when you've got a regular cycle and you kind of know yourself. But as you're saying, when the cycle is changing, you're being called to a higher level of presence, aren't you, with yourself and your body?
Yeah. And that's really annoying and really frustrating and not fun. So just to be real here, you know, not always great, but it is, that's exactly what it is. It's calling you back to presence. And that can just be really annoying at times.
Yeah. Especially when you don't know, it's all very unpredictable. So speaking of the training, so you graduated. My first question for you about that training is, why did you feel the need for the training for yourself personally and professionally?
Yeah, so I'm 5 years into coaching now. I have my certification, I do my supervision, I do all the, you know, all the correct things. And I also did another training, which kind of was more like around systems and issues relating to women and workplaces. And I suppose what I've found through my practice is just, I wanted something to bring to my practice that was more body-based. And so I researched many, many, many different trainings. You know, I contacted you before I even applied. I was really trying to figure out what it was that I needed, what I wanted, what do my clients need. And because yours had the menstrual cycle piece, but also what was equally as important, time-wise, in terms of what we spoke about throughout the whole 6 months, was the nervous system piece. And I think that the two of those have really brought an extra richness to my coaching. So in terms of, you know, part of my work is helping women reclaim their time and their energy and their purpose. And, you know, menstrual cycle awareness is part of that. It's part of reclaiming your time. Mm-hmm. It's part of unhooking from harmful work systems that have us in a 9-to-5. It, you know, can also help us plan. It can help us, you know, it really is a tool for both planning and then also an internal tune for our own management, our own energy management. So that has helped me. And I've been interested in cycles for years, and I've tracked my own cycles for, you know, probably 8, 9, 10 years at this stage. But this really gave me it just pulled it all together, and it pulled it all together beautifully with the nervous system piece. And because it's really difficult to sustain change, and the change that the women that I work with, some of it's pretty big stuff. Some of it is, you know, really saying no to the status quo. And that is not easy, because that threatens our, you know, our sense of belonging and our sense of safety. And people think that once you get the clarity that it's easy, but actually, no, clarity is usually, it actually takes very, very little time. What the trickier bit is the sustaining of that, the walking that path, the keeping going, even in the face of other people not approving, other people saying that you're mad for leaving that job, other people saying, like, that's, you know, what are you doing with your life? This is not the trajectory of traditional success. And so walking that path is not easy. So I think if you can connect into your body through your cycle and through the wisdom from that, and then also be literate in your own nervous system, like, they're just amazing tools for change in your life.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that, Sarah. I was going to ask you, how did you benefit from the program? But you've kind of answered it as well in your lovely answer there. So thank you. And what I will say as well is, like, you did such a great job of navigating the training. It's a 6-month program in your own way and in the way that was right for you. And that's, like, I could really see that, you know, while you were in the program, was really assessing how to learn the material that was in a way that was right for you, how much time to commit, what way you learned. And it's always going to be different to everyone else, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that is, I suppose, that's a path I'm traversing in many areas of my life right now. Like, what is my flow? What is the natural way that I do things? How do I really learn, as opposed to, you know, cramming stuff into my head and regurgitating out, which is how I learned in school. And that your course, I think, gave us really a massive permission slip to learn in the way that was right for us. And I found that hard. I actually found that really tricky, because, you know, I've come through, you know, university, I've done a master's, I know how to work that system. But when I'm in a learning environment where my body needs are taken into account, where how I'm feeling on that day is taken into account, sounds amazing, and it is amazing, but it can also be tricky, because it's just not what I know. It's not familiar. It's just not the way I associate learning and school and university. So going through the process in the way that you facilitated brought another layer for me in terms of permission for myself, you know, autonomy, agency, and that I can learn enough by just doing it the way that's right for me. And if I need to go back and learn something else, I can do that at a later stage. I don't need it all right now to tick a box. And so that was huge for me, because I very much had that. And even beginning, you know, having that kind of pupil teacher dynamic. And as you said in the beginning, we have met before as peers. And I was wondering, oh, is this going to be weird? Because Lisa's now my teacher. And it wasn't, because that's not the dynamic that you set up in the group. So, yeah.
Do you have an example of that, Sarah, about learning something about the way that you learn for yourself that was different to what you might have experienced before or thought?
Well, even just a simple thing, and this might seem obscure to many people, but to me, learning was, I can only learn if I'm sitting at a desk. I can only learn if I have my notebook and I've organized my pens and I've just done all the things. And for the first couple of months, that is exactly what I did. But as you know, our sessions are quite lengthy. So that actually wasn't really great for my body. And so I would move. After a while, I just started to move and maybe move downstairs to the kitchen table. Or I sat on an armchair. And that just felt very countercultural to me as to how I learn. And of course, being more comfortable, I thought by being more comfortable, I was going to get more lazy and I was going to not be on and I wasn't going to absorb the information. And in fact, what I found was the opposite to be the case.
That's so powerful. Sorry, I'm just taking a pause there. I'm like, can you repeat that? So good. What did you say that again? Because that's just really, really good. And I want to capture that about being
comfortable. Okay. So I think what I said was, I thought that the only way I could absorb information and learn information was by being at, you know, the standard desk and have been organized and being present, being on. I now know from all the nervous system work that I was in a kind of a hypervigilant state and that, you know, it was probably more of a performance than actually absorbing. And so what I found by allowing myself the practice of just sitting in different places, absorbing the information in different ways, not always having the camera on and just hearing as opposed to looking and hearing, I could learn in different ways and absorb information in different ways that I think was possibly more productive. And I hate that word productive, but possibly I took in more, I think.
I love that, Sarah. That's really, really powerful. And I didn't thank you for sharing that because that's another layer that I didn't realize was going on for you in the background. But it's just nice because I know that I say that in the training, but I don't know exactly like what's happening practically. Like, are people moving around to different armchairs? So that's, I have this image now of you kind of relaxing in an armchair listening. And I guess I had to learn that as well. And that's the thing about this work and the work you do as well, supporting women to unhook from systems and, you know, pave their own way. And like you said, going against the status quo, and it's not easy. And it's like we know how to speak about that, but how do we embody that? And how do we support our clients to make those choices and really tune into their own bodies and listen? And I really do think, and I know you'd agree with me, it's, you know, we as coaches have to be able to do that ourselves or know how to on some level, is it's a lot easier said than done, you know?
Absolutely. It's, we have to do it ourselves, and we also can't hold ourselves up as a model to follow either, because all our paths of success are so different.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, that's why I struggle sometimes with kind of like the online marketplace and the kind of really trying not to move into any sort of influencer role, because my version of success is not yours. And that's usually one of the biggest pieces of work, is my client accepting that their version of success is okay, because it may not be what they see around them. And it certainly isn't what their parents think is success. And it certainly isn't what their friends see as success. And so learning to be okay with that and constantly reminding them and getting back into the body and go, oh yeah, this is what I wanted. Because you forget all the time when you see your neighbor getting a promotion and buying a brand new car. And you've already decided, well, actually, that isn't important to me, but we forget because the messaging is so strong. So sorry, I'm not sure if I answered your question.
No, it's great. I can't even remember what my question was. I'm like, this is really good. I love it. Because it's something I have to think about and come back, like you're saying, come back to. It's so true. Like when you go on social media, those apps are designed to, you know, they've got like teams of psychologists to, you know, get you sucked into the algorithms, right? So it's not like there's something wrong with you if you do this, but you just end up comparing yourself, like you're saying, or to your neighbor, or thinking that your success isn't adequate. But what you're saying is returning to your own definition of success and accepting that. It's something that really needs to be written down on a piece of paper and kept somewhere easy to find, isn't it?
Yeah, because you can head off on the wrong track and then 10 miles down the road go, Jesus, I never wanted this. Yeah. I never wanted this. I knew I didn't want this. How did I forget that I did not want this? Because the what we see around us is so, it's so pervasive and it's so strong. And so to go against that, where if you decide, after you've had your kids, say, for example, that you do not want to go back to that job that paid you 120 grand a year. Mm. People have things to say about that. Mm. People have opinions about that. Mm. And you might be fully okay with it, but you know other people aren't. Mm. And so when you feel that, and you will feel it, that's the nervous system work,
yeah,
to really stay with yourself and mm. like go, oh, actually, as a family, we decided this and we decided that this is right for us. Mm. So I think that's where connecting to our body can really get us in tune with and remain in tune with our purpose, our calling, what is our work that's here to do, mm. and how that intersects with our cycles. Because we do not, you know, success will tell us that, you know, you get clarity on what you want to be when you grow up, when you're 20, and then you do the thing and you earn lots of money and then you get a good pension at the end. And that's it. So it's mm-hmm. very linear. But I really believe that we have cycles and seasons of different purposes and different callings. Mm. And so what is calling you in this season of your life? That may be, yeah, I am spending all my time at home and I'm going to love it. And I'm not going to apologize for it. And I'm not wasting any degree. And I'm not, you know, this is important work. And similarly, if that is not for you, that might be the perfect time where you're like, do you know what? I'm going to set up that business I wanted to do. And I'm going to do it with my baby hanging off me. And that's my calling right now. Mm. So it's different for everybody. And we have different seasons of that. And in 10 years time, it might be something different again. Mm. So, but I think those, as you know, we go through different rites of passage at different seasons of our life and different cycles of our life. Mm. And those two, I suppose I would see as they're real pinch points. So matrescence, so when you move into motherhood, if that's a path that you choose, and also perimenopause, those two, they're real pinch points in terms of, I can no longer tolerate what society has told me I should be, do. And so things have to change. So there, and I think if more people knew that they were massive transition points and actually you're not supposed to stay the same, you're supposed mm. to be different, you're supposed to go through a process. Mm. And if you could be supported in that process, and then at the end of it, maybe you're no longer a corporate lawyer, but you're exactly where you're supposed to be. You know, that's my vision. That's what I love to see for people.
Wow, I love that. And I love the acknowledgement of those two transition points, the pinch points you say, or that they can be pinch points. When you're working, even with yourself, Sarah, and when you're working with clients and groups, how do you support people to identify even how to access their purpose or their calling?
Yeah, so that it's interesting. A lot of people come to me and say, I've no idea, I've no clue, I'm really just at a crossroads. And I am not joking, like 99% within 2 to 3 sessions, that is so, so clear. What wow. people need for that mm. is just space and time mm. and somebody to reflect back to them that it's actually okay to even think about these things. Mm. But also, you know, connecting into your values, connecting into your intuition, building self-trust in really micro moments in the beginning. Mm. Really tuning into yourself. And I don't mean in a real navel gazing kind of way, like, you know, this is my calling and this is my purpose and I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. You know, we do have to think of the wider world as well. But most people I work with are already considering the wider world. They're already considering everyone else in their family. They're already considering everybody else at work. Mm. And so their work is actually to come back to themselves mm. and really get in tune with what were the things that they used to love doing? What are the things that light them up? And it sounds twee, but that is where your information is. That is where your data is. It's just we've been conditioned to believe that they are just not valuable mm. because they're not valued mm. in society.
I love that. Not valuable because they're not valued. Yeah.
And so things like care work. And I mean the broadest terms of care work. That can be nursing, social work, teaching, but then also in the worlds that we inhabit, like coaching, women's circles, you know, they are not valued. And they're not valued because we all know that people who work in those areas, you know, don't earn more than 40 grand a year or 50 grand a year and may have done 5 years of college, like somebody in financial services who's on three times their salary. Yeah. So we know what society has decided is more valuable.
Yeah.
And yet we throw out all this talk about, oh, aren't they great? Aren't they so good? As if like this vocation piece should somehow be enough to warrant paying less, you know? And that's just not okay. And then there's the other caring piece where we've decided that it's okay to pay other people to mind our kids. And that is a calling. That is a job. And that should be a really well-paid job. And it's not. It's one of our worst paid jobs in the country. And yet, if somebody stays at home to do the exact same job, it's considered a waste, of her skills.
Yeah.
And so these are the things that my clients grapple with, because these messages are so, so strong. So how can it be okay? Get clear on what you really want to do for now. It does not need to be forever. And how can you be okay with that? And be okay with other people not being okay with it.
I love that. Sorry, I'm writing notes. I'm writing notes because that's how I listen. And I write things down. I'm like, so good. And there's so much there because, you know, I know you're a mom as well. And so you have that lived experience of navigating all those systems too. And you're working with moms. So it's a whole other layer, isn't it, to the piece of what it is to be a woman in society and with a cycle, etc.
You know, my bigger vision would be to see, like, I see so many women opting out of the traditional workplaces now. And I think that that is fantastic. And they're setting up their own businesses. And I think that's amazing. And I support people to do that. And I think it's brilliant. And I don't think it's sustainable for every single person to set up their own business, right? What we need is work environments that are supportive to all bodies. But particularly people who cycle, who are go through larger cycles, and that we create work environments that really acknowledge that lived experience, that we're not still hiding tampons in our sleeve going to the bathroom at work, that we are, that our workloads are, you know, allocated based on our cycles, or that we can deliver based on our cycles, that what we're really good at is really seen and acknowledged, so that we create values-led businesses that really, really support people in all their humanness and all the other things that are going on in their lives. You know, we're not robots. And this whole thing of just going in and like knuckling down and, I don't know, getting through it and then having the weekend to recover. It's just not, it's not sustainable for so many people. And a lot of women go into part-time work for very, very valid reasons. But there's a, you know, it's just such a, I would love to see companies who, you know, have part-time positions where you can actually get a promotion. I mean, like that is, that just doesn't exist. If you go part-time, okay, you get the work-life balance that you want, but you don't get the financial support and there's a ceiling on that. And then you have pension issues also later on. So all of these things are just what women and females are navigating every single day, and they're trying to figure it all out and work it all out. But I think if you connect, at the very least, spending that time doing something that you love doing, that doesn't mean that you love it every moment of every day, but on the whole, it doesn't go against your whole value system. You don't hate it. And you start connecting more with your cycles around that, so that, okay, maybe your employer doesn't value your cycle, but if you yourself start valuing it and going, right, I know this is my period week, I am going to take it easy this week, or maybe just go at 60%. And maybe your 60% is still more than somebody else's 100%.
Probably, right?
Probably. And let that be okay. Maybe walk to the canteen as opposed to this kind of constant like, oh God, it's lunchtime, I better go. Just things like that. If we can start changing that ourselves on a micro level, that can really help us in terms of our own energy management and having more energy then to put into the things that we do love doing.
Wow. There's a lot there, you said, because it's like the piece, obviously the personal relationship piece with yourself, but then also the navigating the systems piece. And what's coming to mind as you're speaking about that, Sarah, is like you are most of your clients in Ireland?
Most are in Ireland, yes.
Yeah. So have you experienced, like from your client work, you're saying that you work with people who have their own businesses and also people who are still working in employment. Are there companies out there that are making their work environment better places to be, particularly for women and people with cycles?
I think so. I think it's changing. I think the last couple of years, or even like maybe the last 2 years, have certainly seen more, you know, there's more workplace talks on menstrual cycle, and perimenopause is certainly having its moment in the media now as well. So I think that that is, I mean, not all the information is great, but look, at least it's acknowledging its existence, you know? Yeah. And I guess accidentally through, you know, there's a lot more people working from home now as a result of the last couple of years. That has inadvertently allowed people more flexibility and freedom that they never had before. So I don't know if that has come directly from employers, but people can, you know, be more mindful of their cycles now if they're in their home environment or, so I think those things have changed. Have I seen a big seismic shift? I haven't really, no.
No, it's just an interesting, like, you know, it's an interesting thing, that whole, the piece you mentioned about part-time work as well, and how the systems are created and set up for people and opportunities. It's like this all or nothing workforce sort of thing that's happening. And I don't know what it's like in other countries, but yeah, I never really thought about that before, but it's so true. It's like, how are we creating opportunities for people? Different needs. So i.e. like a person who only has the capacity to work part-time for whatever reason.
For whatever reason. That could be disability, neurodivergent, it could be your cycles, it just could be your actual energy, you know?
Yeah. It's like you're only going to be compensated if you're able to like go and work and contribute like as much as you can. And then you're paying a price if you choose to do part-time, which that's sad, really, actually, you know, do you have clients who are, you know, navigating decisions around that kind of stuff?
I have done, but it has tended to go with like an all or nothing thing. They either knuckle down and kind of switch off that part of them that really wants to come out, or they, you know, kind of try to justify it with, well, childcare would cost this amount and my salary is this, so financially it isn't worth it, so I'm going to stay at home, right? Yeah. So as opposed to, you know, this is really right for me and this is really right for our family. Mm. I'm going to own it and I'm going to be okay with it and I'm going to speak about it unapologetically. Mm. So I think that's maybe just a bigger piece in general, that women need to feel okay with the decisions that they make. Mm-hmm. But there's just so many other factors that come at us from all sides.
So before someone can get to that place of, I'm just going to be okay with this, it's like they're navigating all of these
things. Yeah. And what will their colleagues think? And what will their dad think, who was very proud of them being a certain
career person?
Yeah. Like there's so many. The loyalty, but then also your friends. Like if your friends all came from that certain background, and then if you start doing something different, and then they start being a bit weird with you because they feel that you're judging them, and like there's just so much there.
What does it take for someone to get to the place where they want to be, or what do you see in your, maybe it's different for all your clients, but I'm curious about that kind of that process from moving from navigating all those blocks to then just being like, fuck it, I'm going to do this for me.
I think it just reaches, I think like most of us, and I would include myself in this, I have never kind of put my hand up to kind of difficult change. There's been an element of, force might be too strong of a word, but there's definitely an element of pressure. You reach a certain point where I cannot tolerate this anymore. Mm. And so something has to change. Yeah. And so that pressure combined with support, and whether that's from a coach or from a really good friend or some, you know, sometimes you've got like work besties and you're just, you have your plan to leave together, you know, but you do need encouragement and you do need reminders and you do need somebody to cheer you on and support you to do that. I think that is just non-negotiable. And, you know, whether that's a paid or unpaid support is almost irrelevant, but you do need support. Doing it yourself is extremely hard.
Because it's hard to see, because it's that old patterns, and, you know, we consider certain things as normal, don't we? When we're, like, I'll give you an example, because you mentioned the word tolerate earlier, which I think that's such a good word, because it really, like, it's so relevant in both of our work. I said no to something a while ago, and I kind of said no to it before it got to, it was something that I didn't want to engage in. And I said no to it before it got to a really, like, annoying place. It was kind of just at the start where I was like, I don't know if this is kind of annoying. Like, I was benefiting from the situation on some level, but then I was also paying, it was a work thing. I was also paying a price for it in terms of energy and stress and stuff. I was talking to someone about it afterwards, and she said to me, well, Lisa, it sounds like you're saying no to, you're no longer going through the tolerating stage.
Yes. That's next level. That's next level.
I was so proud of myself. I was like, oh my God, I've been doing that all my, and then I was like, holy shit, I've been doing that all my life. I just go through this like tolerating.
Yeah.
Like, period of time. It could be a few months, it could be years. And, you know, it's taken me a long time to sort of recognize those signals, but thanks to the somatic work and like the work you're doing, like talking it out with supports, it's so helpful. And then making the decision and then really trusting your intuition. And it takes a while, doesn't it, to grow.
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah. And that's a practice that needs to be, but I love what you're saying about tolerating, and that I have certainly done that for so many things for so long. And I think a lot of that is, again, the societal stories of, but you should be happy with what you have. You should be happy with your lot. There's people worse off than you. And that, of course, is true, because that will always be true, right?
Yeah.
But then we convince ourselves that we should just tolerate it, knuckle down. And I did that for years in my last job, but I also needed to go through that process at that time. I needed to, I just needed the time to figure out. And also, the reality is, you may have some very real financial commitments that leaving something isn't an option right now. But if you tolerate something, but you know that you have an exit strategy, you know that you're working towards something else, I can't tell you how liberating that is. I knew that for probably 2 years before I left my job. And it really just, I came in with a lighter energy into work. I came in with a, you know what, I did my best today. I came in with just a different attitude, because I knew that I was going to be going. Not tomorrow, but I knew that I had an exit strategy. So if you know that, and even though it could be longer than you wish, if you have a plan in place, that can just give you, again, really helps with your energy management, because you're not spending so much of it just getting by, just soldiering on.
Or in that resentment, because I've seen that in clients before who are navigating change, and they're just, and I've done it as well, like, you're just sitting there bitter.
Oh yeah, seething. And the problem is, if you stay in that place for too long, then you can just get caught in that kind of golden handcuffs space of, well, I can't leave now because I'm too close to retirement, and I can't, you know, and you know, I'll never get terms and conditions like this again, or I'll never, you know, but if you stay there, it's just so hard to pull yourself out of the bitterness. It's really, really tricky.
Oh, I know it is. Yeah. And you kind of almost need someone to point it out to you, don't you? And just be like, that's enough now. When are you going to do something about this? Like, I've had a few of those people in my life. But it's true, because from a somatic point of view, you know, we're talking about the nervous system. When we're in resentment and bitterness, that is energy going towards that. And it's internal, isn't it? It's not like that lovely creative zest that you have in your body isn't going into the things you love doing. It's going towards something you actually don't really have much control over.
And that's why I really, when I'm focusing on work and I'm focusing on purpose, I'm talking about really wide concepts here. I'm not talking about work just in the paid employment. I'm talking about unpaid work. I'm talking about care work. I'm talking about voluntary work. They are all equally as important to me. And just because our current economic system does not value that, does not mean that we should have to play along with that. And also, there's so much room for, you know, your paid work not being your actual calling or purpose and you getting those needs met outside of your paid employment. But you need the energy to do that. Because if you're completely drained, then you're not going to go and take that art class in the evening because you're exhausted. Mm-hmm. Or could you move to a part-time position and, you know, try and build up a business that's related to your calling part-time? You know, I would never be like, jump and the universe will catch you. I'd be like, yeah, jump, but let's have a plan in place and let's make sure that your nervous system can kind of hold that and that you feel safe. That you feel safe making these changes and making these transitions.
Yeah. I love that, Sarah, because if you think about it, actually, you're right. Like if someone is thinking about moving from full-time work to part-time work as an example, or even if you have your own business and you're thinking about pivoting, like that will, that might result in a financial reduction or whatever in your business. But if you know that it's right for you, but in the short term, it could have some sort of financial consequence. It's like, how do you navigate that? But at the end of the day, like what I'm hearing from you is you're taking the energy that you were putting into something that wasn't aligned anymore into something new, and you will get your creative zest back. You will get your creative energy back. Yes. But it might take time after the change and after the transition to build up the new version of yourself.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a whole process there that isn't just, this was my old life and this is my new life. Like that's just not how it works. Or certainly it's not how I've seen it work. It certainly isn't how it worked for me. You know, we need that transition. And you know, what skills do you have that you could, like just say, for example, if you were a qualified bookkeeper, could you do that for 2 days a week and just like pull in enough cash that you know that you have your mortgage covered and your ESB bill covered and you can pay your food and things are okay?
Yeah.
And then because you feel safe on a certain level, you have some time then to build up something else on the side, if it is something else, right? Yeah. So we all have skills that, you know, that we can charge people for, that people need. And okay, they may not be exactly what we want to be doing right now, but they give us, they can help with that transition. They can help with that baseline, or whether that's going part-time or whatever the case may be. And that can, for some people, that can be 6 months. Some people, that can be 5 years. You know?
Where would you suggest, if someone is listening to this and kind of thinking, God, yeah, I have a lot of different things in different places and I'm not really sure. I know something needs to change, but I'm not sure where to start. Like, what would you say to that person? What, do you have a practical exercise or anything or an idea that they might start with?
I have a free meditation on my website called The Ideal Day. And people get a lot out of that. It's so simple. And sometimes when things are simple, we think, yeah, I don't know if that's really any good. But actually, it really is, because it really gets you in tune with, you know, magic wand stuff. What would you like to be spending your time and energy doing? And that can just be a nice starting point for, okay, well, how can I do that on a really, really tiny level today? And again, a lot of people think, oh, there's no point in doing that because it's all or nothing. But building up practices of things that you like doing, you know, if that's like, just say if you did an ideal day meditation and like a lot of like nature came up and being by the sea or whatever, and you're like, well, I don't live near the sea, so that's never going to happen, right? But maybe once a month you decide, I'm going to drive there and I'm going to spend some time there. Or, okay, it's not the sea, but maybe I can find a river near me. Or what's good enough to build up the capacity to receive the enjoyment from the things that we really want to do? And start from there. And that does not cost money. And that does, it does cost time. And it does cost you thinking differently, which is not always easy. But that's within your reach on a very kind of a daily level.
I love that, Sarah. Thank you so much for offering that. The ideal day, that sounds simply gorgeous, actually. And I love simplicity. There's so much value in that. And I feel really drawn to that as well, because sometimes you can get caught up in all, like everyone, like in all the bits we need to get done, and then we lose touch with our preferences. You know, I often go into, oh, I should really do a a 10-minute meditation, or I should really do some of the Qigong or whatever, you know. And it's like, well, what do I actually want to do?
Yes.
And it might be, like you say, that drive to the sea once a month or every few weeks, or finding another walk or something different.
Yeah. And how do you support yourself in that? You do it by creating a bit of a structure. And for me, that's an appointment in my Google
Calendar.
It really is. And I resisted that for a long time because I thought, well, if this is something I really want to do, I'm just going to organically feel it and it's all just going to be, it'll just arrive. It doesn't arrive because I'm putting on 10 loads of washing a day and I'm emptying the dishwasher. It doesn't arrive. I have to make it arrive.
I'm laughing, but it's so true. It's so true. You have to, like, it's like seeing your friends. You're not going to be able to maintain friendships if you don't have them in your diary, you know.
Yes.
You don't, like, make appointments with them. It's, you need to, like, count yourself as a friend to yourself and put it in your diary. I think I'm going to start doing that. I have like a morning routine in my diary, but I like the idea of maybe having a day a month or an afternoon a month or something to reconsider just kind of doing nice things, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
That's gorgeous, Sarah. Thank you so much. Last question. Where are you in yourself with all of this? Because I know you're helping a lot of people and you're educating. And I know you shared a bit about the perimenopause experience, the step into that landscape. And yeah, I'm curious about where you are in your creativity, in your business, and in Sarah in general.
Yeah, I mean, and I say this to all my clients, everything that you're going through, I am always going through. Mm. Okay, I might be at a slightly different, you know, timeline, or, but I'm going through it all the time. And you know this, there is no end point. There's just, we keep revisiting a lot of the same things, but just from a different viewpoint, because we have different experience and we have different wisdom. I do feel 5 years in, I feel really solid in what I provide as a coach. I do a lot of supervision. I do a lot of professional development, and I really am always bringing new things to clients that I feel are things I've done myself that I feel really can stand up. But another thing that's kind of really coming into my world now, and it's been a personal thing, but I'm bringing it more into my client work as well, is really tuning into spirituality, our intuition, our inner wisdom. And, you know, I would have had some old beliefs on that I can either be a straight up practical coach or I can be a spiritual coach, and I can't be both. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's more kind of colonial thinking, that this information is not as valid as, you know, linear data. Mm. And what I found is practicing myself, and even just having that morning practice of checking in with my body, whether you check in with your cycle or you check in with your womb or you check in just with you in general, whatever that is, that can really, really help set you up for the day in terms of what you spend your time on, in terms of how you expend your energy. And actually, it can be a really, really energy efficient way to do your work and do your business, by really tuning into your gut, really tuning into your intuition. So these are pieces that I've been navigating, and yeah, and my clients get to benefit from that now as well.
Thank you so much, Sarah. You've really shared a lot with us very generously today. I feel very inspired, and I'm sure our listeners do as well. So thank you very much. And I'm going to make sure your website is in the show notes and they can find the Ideal Day meditation there. And you're on social media. And are you currently doing any courses, or you're taking clients, or anything you want to share with
the... I've just reopened my one-to-one practice, so you can have a look at my website, sarahslattery.ie. And yeah, set up a call and we can have a chat.
Great. Thanks, Sarah. And I hope you have a lovely, restful day on your day one.
Thank you.
Thank you again. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for joining today's conversation. This community, these topics, and the stories I share are not possible without all of you being part of the journey. If you are interested in getting more support for your own personal process, head on over to my website, lisadeyoungcoaching.com, to book a consultation call with me. Or you can sign up for a free course there as well. And as always, please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. Lots of love for the week, and see you next time.